presented the idea that addiction is often a form of displacement behavior, that for many people, they have something in their lives that they can't react to the way that they want to, something that makes them very angry or very frustrated or whatever it is, but there's something psychologically that blocks that instinctive response. They won't allow themselves to get angry about this particular thing, but they won't allow themselves to respond. And so the addiction actually is the displacement of what they want to do, and they won't let themselves, so it comes out in this behavior that is self-destructive, and that's often why addictions can change form. So someone may start out with a gambling addiction and then try to address the gambling, stop the gambling, but then their behavior takes a different form and they become an alcohol addict or some other kind of addict, because it's the compulsive behavior, not the form of it itself. I just kind of wondered if you could talk a little bit about that, because it made a lot of sense to me, but I wasn't sure. I just never heard anyone talk about it that way
before. Yeah. Well, there's some interesting theories. Interesting. I think they're interesting just descriptions of addiction. Description of symptoms of addiction. It sounds like displacement theory would be like an inverse or the other side of attachment theory, where there's been an unhealthy attachment or failure to make attachments for me, I believe that addiction is deeper than psychological. Okay, it's just a little bit. See, that the problem with psychology is that the problem isn't the mind. Okay, if the addict or the alcoholic were rational, then you could read that stuff, or read about addiction, and understand and say, "Oh yeah, gosh, why am I really doing that? I should do that." And then they just close the book, go home, and they're okay. But that's not the way it works. Because there's something else going on that the psychologists don't really like to talk about. And that's the spiritual aspect. I mean, if you believe in good, I hope you do, then you have to believe in evil. There's some kind of a dichotomy. There's something going on that we don't really understand. And that's good and evil. Now, what I believe myself in the adversary. I believe in the adversary. I believe that there is something that I really don't understand. Okay, that is trying to influence myself. Okay, and everyone who's alive to move away from that direction, that point, that centeredness. In Christ, in the Lord. Now, I think it becomes very personal with addiction. Because, it's like the guy this morning. It's almost like talking about two different personalities, two different people. Now, was he possessed? No, I don't think so. I think there's an aspect of what it is to be human, okay, where we have different facets of our own personality. When God created man, he did not create a box or a door or something innate. Okay? He made us, we are very, very complex creatures. We are created with immense potential. Okay? But that potential, okay, can also be destructive to us. Okay? If we don't actualize that potential in a good way. And so, how shall I say this? If our soul is like a garden, and our soul has a lot to do with how we think, how we reason, what we believe, what are our what are our attitudes toward life, toward one another, and towards God. Our soul is a reflection, our attitudes towards those things are a reflection of our soul. Okay. Now, so if you've got a soul that's supposed to be like a garden, and we planted the virtues, we planted good things in it, and we try to love one another, and when we love one another, we it rains upon the garden of our soul. Okay. So we have flowers of joyousness, freedom, and community, and love, and all these beautiful things. If we don't have those things, it's just like an earthly garden. You know, if you go out here and you plant a garden, and then you harvest the fruit of the garden, and everything's just fine, and you don't do anything else to that garden, the next year, what's it going to be? It's going to be weeds, exactly. Okay, and I think that's what happens to us. You know, and if we plant the wrong things in our garden, which I understand they're doing more of these days. if we plant the wrong things in our garden, okay, or if we don't plant the good things, then there's other things that come right up, and they will be manifested in our life. Okay. Because the true soul food that we have comes from God. Okay. And He rewards us with those gifts, with those things. Okay, but we have to be the kind of receptacle. We have to be open to that. We must be willing to accept those things. We must cultivate those things. We have to be them. Okay, which He would have us to be. Okay, does that make sense? Now, if we do that, okay, then the adversary cannot stand against us. Because he cannot stand against God. Separately, we have no hope, we have no chance. Without the Lord, we are lost. We need Him, okay, to pull us up, okay, from the state of fallenness that we have. Okay. Does that, and especially with addictions. So we can have an attachment disorder, we can have this disorder, we can have that disorder, we can be antisocial, we can have borderline personality, or we can have bipolar, or whatever kind of problems we have. And those are real serious things, no question about them. Serious things, difficult things. Medical science helps us to understand those things, those aspects of ourselves, very well. Okay. But without the grace of God, okay, to overcome those things, and we cannot overcome them. Okay, He must overcome them in us. We overcome them through Him. See, and this is the difference between psychological counseling and spiritual counseling, and getting into the grace of God into our lives to help us to live. But if without those things, we're simply lost creatures. I'm sorry, you have a question.
Will you address the relationship between
we talked about a predisposition towards addiction. And the thing with the light switch is more like I was referring mostly to a biological predisposition. Like in Alaska, the Eskimos, down the Yukon up there, they say that 50% of all the people that are around the home will become alcoholics. One half, 50%. It's destroying a whole nation of people. That is a genetic predisposition. If you have a male child, okay, who's emotionally, physically, and emotional abuse and physical abuse become persistent, okay? Nothing intended there. But they're like sisters. And when those two things happen to a male child, it just destroys the self-esteem. Okay? And when they drink, You know, when they take that drink of alcohol, all of a sudden, you know, wow, I'm rich, I'm stout, I'm smart, you know, I'm good looking, you know, and all these kind of things. I can do all this stuff. So that it opens up something, you know, it has to do, I believe, with the endorphins and the dopamine and all this other stuff. So all of a sudden they feel good, you know, and the confidence is there. And so the alcohol becomes like a medicine to them. Okay. You couple that with a genetic predisposition, okay, and then the person is just almost predestined to be into addiction. You take a girl, a young lady, girl, who is sexually abused, or a boy is sexually abused. But when girls are subjected to sexual abuse, the rape, the incest, if they have a traumatic event and they're not able to work through it adequately with their mother or with their parents, then there's what it's been my experience. I've seen a lot of rage and real deep anger. Okay, as they get older and they get really into the drugs, especially like cocaine, they get into the drugs and start acting out sexually, and then the alcoholism comes just right along with it. And when you think about drug abuse, alcoholism, and drug abuse, consider that with a garden variety alcohol, you start drinking when it's 18, 19 years old. It will take about between 10 and 15 years before there's a personality change, before you can really see the personality change. Okay. And most people can identify even a point in time when usually a spouse. And they say, oh yeah, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, it really changed. What's going on, you know? With drugs, okay, especially drugs like cocaine, okay, that personality change can happen within 3 or 4 months, less, depending on how they're using it. Crack cocaine does some things to people that we can't even imagine. A good friend of mine became a heroin addict. A kid he used to basketball with, you know, Christ the King, you know, blue sheep. And so he came out of the Navy and he was an alcoholic and taking drugs and became a heroin addict. And so in the early 1980s I was doing addictions counseling. And I had a reason to go see this guy and done some family business. And I have a couple of brothers of mine that are dead, and a sister, and one of them died from addiction. And shortened the life too. And so I had to go see this guy about some time. And we were talking about crack. Because crack really didn't come out until 1982. Now this guy, he'd been selling heroin for years. And I said, Bob, I said, you know, I said, is crack cocaine really as bad as what we're hearing about it in the center and the treatment center? He said, Floyd, he said, I've seen people do things on crack cocaine that they would never do on heroin. Never. Yeah. And so that shift in personality, the things that people do, it just happens very quickly on heroin. Yeah.
I wanted to make a little punctuation point here to make sure I'm hearing you right. And that is in distinguishing between the use of a substance and the underlying cause. Because my recovery is grounded in the understanding that at the end, when my alcoholic illness was in full flower, after 30 years of drinking every day, my behavior, my personality, all the aberrant behaviors were in evidence whether or not I was drinking. That the personality change is something that's operating independent of the substance. So the problem, and the day my recovery started, was the day I suddenly saw that my alcohol, consumption of alcohol excess was not really my problem, but rather the delusion that I was in control. And the answer was spiritual discipline, and a lot of other help too. But I just wanted to, the personality change when it's operating is there with or without the substance.
Yeah, there's a personality change. Without the personality change, there wouldn't be an addiction. I don't believe that the addiction would exist. You have symptoms of abuse, alcohol or drug abuse, without the addiction. Okay. And we see that from time to time. And I don't want to digress too much, but we see it quite a bit in Romania, actually. Where I don't think the alcoholism rates are so much higher in Romania than what they are in the United States, except that there are almost no treatment programs. Okay, just a few of them we've helped start, maybe one or two other ones. But there's a lot of alcohol use. Okay, and they use it like food. You know, they use it because it's just a part of the cultural heritage. You think, you know, they take a couple shots of sweet stuff and eat some pork fat before you go out into the field and do the morning work. And when they drink it at noon, you know, it's just a part of the culture, especially in the village. That's changing, slowly changing, you know, as it becomes more modern and urbanized and mechanicalized. And now they're driving tractors and cars instead of the horse and buggy, you know. And so they have to pay more attention to what they're doing. Because, you know, it's more dangerous. And, there's a big push on over there to stop them from drinking and driving. I can tell you that. But it's, you know, we used to see them, they'd be completely drunk, you know, in the wagon like this, and the horse would be going, because the horse knows he's way home. Yeah. And, okay, we should probably. Is there any other questions before we go? Any more comments? Yeah.
I was just curious. This personality change, is that permanent? So if a person gets into recovery, does their old personality, who they were created, mask?
Well, I do not believe in enduring personality traits. In other words, I don't believe that we're cast in stone. I believe that we're very plastic. We have plasticity. We're able to change and to grow and to become, okay, to actualize, to be. You know, and God is in recovery, and AA, they say, you know, well, don't worry about where you're at today, honey, because, you know, God's not through with you yet. And so, you know, now I've been in recovery myself for 31 years. Okay? And I would not want to go back. I wasn't a bad kid, you know, or a bad guy. You know, I just happened to be, you know, where there's a lot of free and easy alcohol, you know. But I would not want to go back, okay, and be the person I was before I came into recovery. However, I would not want to be anybody else. Because, you know, I am who I am. I'm not anybody else, and I wouldn't want to change who I am. I think that good people, bad people, they're different. You know, God has a plan for us. And we, addiction is just, it was just an episode of my life, you know. And I thank God that I was able to find my way through it. Okay, and in the process, find a church and find a relationship with God as I didn't understand it. But even people who are not addicts and alcoholics, I pray for them that they are also, because even people that are not, you don't have to go to hell to find heaven. Okay, you don't have to be a fool to be wise. Okay? Some people find wisdom, okay, or they find God without going to the bottom. But even the wise people, okay, even the people who never afflict themselves with addiction, okay, even they constantly, some of them constantly seek to grow towards God. Because when you begin to find God, you know, then you see that hey, you know, there's a big distance between me and Him. And so I want to move, to grow, to be closer to Him, closer to Christ. Okay, that's what Lent's all about, you know. It's about us stopping and saying, okay, wait a minute, you know, I've this last year, you know, I've kind of distracted myself, you know, from from the spiritual life, and I need to move myself back and get more centered up and get more Christian and more Christ-like, and you know, kind of shuck off my evil ways and be that person who I believe Christ would have me to be. You know, that's movement. That's growing toward Christ. I think that's what. You know, you don't have to be an alcoholic. I hope that people who are not alcoholics do that. Okay, because I believe that is what orthodoxy is about. Okay. To me, orthodoxy is like AA. AA is not intended to be a final answer to anything. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that the church is either. Okay. I believe that if I go to an AA meeting and I sit in a chair, it's not going to help me to get sober. I mean, if I hear something in there I can use, yeah, that'll help. But just being in a meeting, just being saying, oh, you know, I don't want to break my anonymity, so I'm not going to tell you what 12-step program I'm in, but just going to any recovery program, okay, and say, you know, well, I'm here, so therefore I am, and all this kind of stuff, that doesn't work. Just like going into the church and sitting in a pew, and, you know, if you don't do the deal of what that church is about, okay, going to the church doesn't do any good. It might, because you'll eventually maybe pick up something along the way. But we have to practice what is in the religion. We have to practice the 12 steps. Okay? Otherwise, they're for nothing. You know, but it's the practicing of it. Okay? It's something that happens inside of ourselves. Okay, that moves us, that helps us to become, to be, and to grow. Okay? Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Sometimes I'm not clear. I mean, you know, I try to answer too quickly, perhaps.
Is addictive behavior and irrational things like I need approval and purpose and all of that, or approval and all, is that considered part of addictive behavior?
Well, I think a lot of people do that. You know, and I think that. If a person has that need before or after they begin using alcohol or drugs, the use of the alcohol or the drugs might exasperate that situation. It might make the whole situation a little bit more acute, a little bit more intense, a little bit more difficult for them to manage or to deal with, okay, especially with young people. If you have someone with an immature character or immature personality, then it takes nurturing, it takes growth, it takes teaching. Okay, I believe it takes God's grace. Okay, which we find, you know, which is one reason why I'm so happy to see young people in church. You know, I know what they're being exposed to. Okay. And so. When they have all that nourishment, okay, and the grace, and the teaching, and the traditions, they have a better chance of growing through that, of working through that, okay, of maturing, of living past that. Okay. But if they're in another environment where they're not nurtured, and maybe they're loved, but in a very sick way, okay, and they're exposed to abuse or one of these other kind of things, and then you have someone who gets stuck in that pathology, and there's more pathology added to it, and it just becomes more confusing to that person and more difficult for them to work through it. And then it becomes something that they feel is a part of them, and they start thinking, you know, well, that's the way I am. It's not a condition that I have, it's who I am. And then they get the thing bad about themselves, and that they're no good, and all these other kinds of things.
It seems to me like there's two types of examples. There's one example of the kids starting out, you know, just drinking for fun or because of pleasure or whatever, and it's, you know, no big deal, it's a thing to do. And then there's the other side, which is drinking because of a particular need. Either they were victims of abuse, or, you know, their wife died, or, you know, whatever. But it's like, you know, there's some kind of real psychological need to drink. So, in your experience, or how would you handle two, is there a difference in having those two groups?
Well, okay, can you rephrase that a little bit more succinctly, because I'm not sure I understood.
Well, it seems to me there's a difference between the person who became an alcoholic because he was just doing it for fun, because he was just doing it for the pleasure.
Yeah, yeah.
And the person who started whatever, drinking or whatever.
I see.
Because of something that happened in his life.
Yeah.
Or for whatever, in other words, it's some kind of a concrete pain or need.
Well, okay. It's a very complex issue, and what I believe is that without the genetic predisposition, okay, then the person who's drinking for pleasure, at some point in time, they'll say, oh, you know, this is really not, a lot of college kids do this, they go to college, and they drink like fish while they're in school, and after school, they just simply stop drinking, or they drink much less, and they get married, and they go on for life, have a career, and blah, blah, blah. There are other ones who go to college. And they start drinking heavy in college, and then they continue the heavy drinking, okay, past college. Maybe they get into a job where there's a drinking culture, okay, some workplaces have drinking, some workplaces have drinking culture. Salesmen have a terrible drinking culture. And so they continue drinking, and they will, if they have a, depending upon their predisposition toward addictions, and everyone has it to some degree or another, they will eventually become either dependent or addicted. And there's a difference between biological or psychological dependence and true addiction. And but it's the same way with psychological problems. You know, there are many people who lose husbands and wives and spouses, and they may drink to compensate for a short period of time. But at some point in time, the alcohol is not going to work for them. Okay? With a person with a genetic predisposition, okay, for the alcohol, they drink the alcohol that works for them. Okay, it's different for them, for the alcohol and for the addict. Okay, it's, and this is where alcohol and drug addiction kind of separate. Okay, because of the nature of the drug itself. And with most drugs, okay, they become addicted. With certain drugs, they become addicted within a short period of time. But it's a whole different pathology. Say with heroin or crack cocaine and some of the newer drugs. With drugs like alcohol and marijuana, they take a longer period of time. So they have more time to adjust or to avoid the addiction. But with biological dependency, I believe there are a lot of people, and we see it in Romania, who become biologically dependent, physiologically dependent upon drugs. Because when they don't drink, they get shakes, or they may get, you know, nervous, or have puke, or whatever, they have seizures. But then they really don't go back to it so much. Okay? Or they may learn to drink more moderately. But that's more of a biological thing. When you get into a psycho-spiritual addiction, then it's a different thing. It's almost like being overtaken, you know, by the drug. You know, the Japanese have a way of saying it. You know, man takes a drink, and then the drink takes the drink, and then the drink takes the man. And that's kind of the way it works. You know, and it really depends on where they're at. And I didn't put it in here because the whole dialogue. It's a good question. I don't know if that answer helps or not. I don't know if I was direct on that.
Well, I was thinking more of the treatment. Because if a person has a particular problem, you would want to address the problem more, I think, than the person who was just,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
drinking.
Oh, problem. Okay. As far as the recovery program, well, one, the first one would be more behavioral. It would be more behavioral. As a counselor, I would have that person focusing in on going to AA meetings, establishing a new set of friends, educating himself about the disease concept of addiction, to alcoholism particularly, have him review his past and see the self-defeating behaviors, and I'd begin him in a path of working, especially the first five steps of AA, so he'd start feeling better. Now the second one, I would do the same thing, but I would also refer the person to a psychotherapist, to a psychologist who specializes in those kind of issues. Okay, so that way you have a multidisciplinary approach. You have, you know, biopsychosocial, social, and spiritual. So that, but you have to address the psychological if the psychological is acute. But what happens is that oftentimes a person who's been treated heavily and they go into a treatment program, they got 30 PRAS or they got all these psychological problems. Well, at Valley Hope, we used to have MMPI, which is a Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Disorder. And these guys would come in that thing, and we give them a test about 2 days after they came in, after they're sober enough to read their lines, you know. And they fill in all the dots, and they'd have all these spikes on the scales and everything. You know, they have these exaggerated personality disorders. And some of them were really diagnosed. Well, actually, they all got a diagnosis. The psychologist would give them the test and administer the therapy. We would administer the test, the psychologist would, they agreed on the test. They would do the evaluation. But then we give them a second test about a month later, and all those scales would be down. And you would not see the exaggerated scales for particular personality disorders. Now, they've done studies on this thing. And what they say is about 80% of people who go into a residential program have a psychological diagnosis of some kind or another. However, if they stay if they stop drinking, once you stay sober for about a year, the vast majority of those people will no longer have that diagnosis, or at least not to a very acute degree. Okay, after they've been in recovery for a period of time. Now this is, I believe, if they're working appropriately, if they're working as a working 12 steps of AA, if they're doing something to lift themselves up spiritually and psychologically. Does that help?
Yeah.
So it's not just there's no silver bullet. There's no real, you can't just drive a stake through the heart of a vampire and kill a vampire. If you really gotta use a net, you know, there has to be a lot of things. And the more things and the more acute things working together, okay, the better off that person is, the more likelihood that they're gonna be in recovery. I'm sorry.
I'm just thinking maybe we should take a 10-minute break.
Yeah. Okay, good.